the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Spot Track Podcast. Brandon Kravitz here, your host for the day, along with the money man himself, Mike Jannetty, setting the social media world ablaze with his WNBA contract graphics. Well, I had a lot of fun combing through that. Mike, well done. A banner week for Spot Track, in my humble opinion.
All right. Just transparency. I do this for all the leagues at draft time. I didn't just single out the WNBA because I was trying to force the issue. This is just something we've started to do with these graphics for first round picks. You're going to see a lot of them next Thursday for the NFL. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot more commas along with those graphics. But yeah, look, what's wrong with awareness, right? I mean, if this thing's on the Today Show and Good Morning America because it's low, that can only help this thing. Because if these girls play like we think they can play, this everything should come forward. The jersey sales are already there. The primetime games are already there. ABC's sucking up Indiana Fever games left and right. So, you know, if I have one small percentage point part in this by making people aware of the $77,000 rookie wage scale, CBA commissioned rookie wage scale, right? This isn't like Indiana's lowballing her. This is what the league says has to happen. So it is what it is. And hopefully this is the start of big change over the next 2 years when they can opt out of the CBA.
I wonder what people thought WNBA players made, or if they just simply never thought about it. I wonder which of the two it is.
I've seen that quite a lot, Brandon. And what's funny is that's exactly the reason they make this, right? The fact that you don't know means you don't watch or don't follow, which is exactly why these girls are only making $78,000. Right. So again, it's a rough ride right now, right? I have a feeling these girls are getting questioned left and right about this, unfortunately. But it's got to be positive if they can show up, if they can put on a show, if they can do what they can do, because I have to imagine that this is going to be the focal point of the next CBA. And by the way, and this is not for nothing, this is an NBA-owned league, right? They are commissioned by the NBA. The NBA pays a huge percentage point to keep this league afloat. There's a lot of NBA players that's talking about this right now as well. So maybe there's a little bit more oomph in adding to that pocket to making sure that the hand that feeds this league maybe actually helps a little bit more, and that we don't have to have this eye-popping discussion. And it is, by the way, I'm not discounting this. The salaries, which I've known for years and years, having to track this stuff, are low. They're crazy low, and there's a reason that these women all have other jobs and play on other teams, et cetera, et cetera. So I just hope that the rough ride that this has been, and I'll have to throw myself into this because I can't even avoid the comments on this one, Brandon. They're coming left and right at me. I just hope that this is the start of the change.
I've heard it theorized that maybe the WNBA should go to a private equity partner. You have somebody come in and like they would buy a team, buy the league, which I guess is what's, you could explain that same model for the UFL, USFL, XFL, whichever variation of that. Do you think that is an option here? I know that, and we'll get to this, the TV contracts coming up in a couple of years could change the dynamic of this conversation, but is it possible that they look that route rather than having the NBA subsidize this, actually have it privately owned?
I don't think so. You want to say that there's an effort to have more teams owned by massive corporations and, you know, former athletes, right? I think, which is, could be a really big step for this league, because that's just going to add dollars and awareness if you've got some popular athletic names attached to these teams. As far as the league itself, is there a corporation better suited to financially back this team than the NBA? You know what I mean?
Probably, like,
I know there's some tech companies and all, you know, out there at least on the same level, but the NBA is just printing cash right now, not to the NFL standard, but it's extremely healthy, as you might imagine. So I think they're backed by the right situation. Maybe they just need to look around and read the room and understand, hey, this is probably a really good time to ask for a little bit more right now, because we have quite a few sticks on the fire that are about to burn, and we want to make sure that everything goes right. This is the time to strike. There's no question about it.
So after all the discourse and the conversation that even you have not been able to avoid on your social accounts, what is the essential piece? If you could point to one aspect of this, all of this dialogue about what these players should be making, what they're not making. What's the piece that people tend to miss the most?
Why it's happening, why they make this money. Again, it's CBA driven. It's obviously way more complicated than that, and I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole too far. I'll simply say this. And by the way, there's a lot of really smart players in this league, in this WNBA league, that are saying these things out loud on many podcasts and radio shows, and hopefully this week in interviews. It's being promoted through the CBA that this is a 50-50 revenue split, and it's just not. All right. It's not. It is to a certain degree, except for there's all of these steps up the ladder that the league has to get to in terms of making their own money before the revenue split kicks in. So there are years where no new money is added essentially to the players' fund because they didn't reach certain thresholds and certain milestones with revenue. That's got to change, right? It should be an absolute one-to-one conversation so that at any point in time, the players' pool continues to increase as much as the health of the league increases. So there is a little bit of a split there. Whereas in many of these other bigger leagues, that has been taken out. That used to be a big thing with a lot of these CBAs, is the players could only get their money if we hit certain metrics. And I think that's pretty common with many corporations in terms of how executives versus non-executives earn their raises, etc. So that to me is a sign that the league is ready to grow up. I'm not sure if they're there yet revenue-wise, but certainly over the next couple of years after what we think can happen, that's the big part of the CBA that should change in order to get these salaries at least into six figures on a standard basis, right? I mean, if the minimum salaries for these other leagues are $800,000, $900,000 on a very minimum year one level, can we at least double what the WNBA is currently offering out there so it's not as much of a sticker shock?
So you told me when we spoke earlier this week that the WNBA's ability to rethink these contract structures will perfectly align with Caitlin Clark's rookie deal, which is that's as serendipitous as it gets. What changes at that point that would allow a seismic shift in, because her deal lasts what, 4 years?
It's a 4 year deal. It's 3 years plus a club option. And she can, like most leagues, by the way, she can push for an extension after that third year. So if we're talking about the fact that players can opt out of this CBA after 2025, so after two seasons, now we're into that new season, so they can negotiate in 2026. Caitlin Clark is ready for an extension before the 2027 season. It should all be sitting right there, right? So we can be talking about a restructure of the rookie wage scale, or at least how the revenue increases the rookie wage scale on an annual basis. And then B, we could talk about the max contract, because right now, as I look at the current rankings, the maximum average salary in this league is $242,000. That's the top players, right? That's Tarazi. That's everybody, at least the brand names that we've known up to this point. So yes, we want everybody to win it to some degree, but like it did with LeBron 20 some years ago, right? When he and Chris Paul sort of reinvigorated the financial outlook for NBA players, it has to start somewhere. And if it starts with an uptick of the rookies to get more of these women out of college, because that's going to be a big conversation, right? These women are going to stay 4 years, maybe 5 years in college, because the nil money is just blowing this stuff out of the water. So
right.
you got to start to re-engage the rookie wage scale a little bit to match that competition. And then you want your superstars to have superstar contracts. So yes, there's going to be a middle-class problem, as the NBA had, as the NFL is currently having right now. But I think that's what you compromise with to start to capitalize on what you're dealing with hopefully what you're handed over the next 2 years. So yeah, it aligns with Caitlin and really this entire draft class. And it would be a really nice time to be able to renegotiate the rookie scale and then the extensions that those females are about to make.
The dynamic that I'm so intrigued by with all of this, I think the long-standing legacy members and of people that play the game or people that have supported women's basketball for a while, they're sort of in a tough spot because they appreciate the attention that Caitlin Clark is bringing to the game, but they also, they have to resent the fact that it took this long to get here and that people, casuals like myself in terms of this league, are now all of a sudden they're all in because of one player when there's all these great players and there have been historically.
Yeah.
Do you see that sort of dynamic being either present or a problem? What do you think about that theory?
Yeah, I think about it quite a bit. I thought about it quite a bit this past year. Like, I'm not sure what the difference between Caitlin Clark and Sabrina Ionescu really is, right? Didn't we just go through this with Ionescu over the past couple of years? She just didn't, because it was West Coast, she didn't get the visibility. I'm not positive exactly why Caitlin Clark is here and many of these other women, Sue Bird, et cetera, didn't get this kind of notoriety, at least to this level. Certainly they became famous and popular and kind of household names for anybody who was at least in touch with this. But yeah, Caitlin Clark has transcended female sports, not just women's basketball, not just college basketball, right? She has gone way above into pop culture to the point of where, like I said, the Today Show is talking about her. Good Morning America is doing features on her and now on the WNBA. I'm not positive why it's her. There's probably, you know, people that follow this stuff from a sociological standpoint that have many more answers. But if she can hold her own, because that's the big concern here, right? What if she flops? This is all for nothing. If she can hold her own, my hope is that these other women that we're talking about, Ionescu, Sue Bird, pull away from a bit of the jealousy that we're hearing, and it's not everybody. There's a few names out there, and sort of just latch onto this thing, right? And that it becomes a collective upswing, and not just what Caitlin Clark has done, kind of like what Michael Jordan did, right? We don't want that. So my hope is that she can hold her own, and then there's an attachment to these other current stars that probably belong in the same conversation that Caitlin Clark is, at least right now, as a new WNBA member. So I'm with you. I don't quite understand it, Brandon, but I don't think we should question it, right? It's here. It's a thing. Yeah. It is the one single thing that can lift this league. And like I said, not just this, but female sports to nth degree that is very, very rare. It has been at least over the past 2-3 decades.
I just hope the players in the league, whether it's her teammates or the stars in the sport, recognize that, because it can be tough. These individuals are great in their own right. They have egos, and I think there'd be natural resentfulness and that sort of thing. If that becomes too big a conversation, I think it could hold back a lot of the progress.
I will say this. A big part of where we are right now is that Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, at least on the court, had a rivalry, right? We know now for sure that they don't hate each other as human beings, right? That's all come out, and that's going to continue to happen. So I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. If Caitlin Clark can play, that's obviously 85% of this whole thing. She's got to come out blazing, whether it's via the pass, whether it's with 30 points a game, whatever it needs to be. She's got to come out and do her thing. I'm okay if she starts to rub some people the wrong way. I think Ionescu continues to do that. I'm not sure she's a beloved figure in the WNBA in terms of her peers. I'm okay with Caitlin rubbing some people the wrong way, because I do think that rivalry, that kind of villain role, is really good for sports. So I don't want this to be everybody's in and everybody loves her if that's not going to drive this thing forward, because I do think that the LSU Iowa situation is really a big, big factor here.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, though. Either way, she's got to perform.
Yeah.
Because I think what I'm saying is, and perhaps a little paranoia, because I like the growth that we're seeing. I like the interest that I have, genuinely. The more the merrier for me. I've never paid attention to the WNBA. All of a sudden, I care. It gives me another thing to pay attention to in May. Mm-hmm. So I like that as a sports fan, and maybe should have checked in before. But yeah, if she's not good, other players burying her will end the story.
Yeah.
But if she's great, it doesn't matter what anybody says. So that's right. You're right about that. Let's move to the NBA. Jonte Porter banned from the league for life. This comes after a betting probe found that he was betting on Raptors games and handing out information on his own health status, even removing himself from a game at one point.
Yeah.
The most common search on the internet right now for Jonte Porter, you probably know what it is because I think it's leading people to your website. What did Jonte Porter make in the NBA? So you care to weigh in on that aspect of the conversation, because I do think it's an important factor here.
Well, first of all, this guy was waived by the Detroit Pistons last October. So if you couldn't make the Pistons in 2023, obviously the things were not going well for you on the court. He played about 2.5 seasons, made about $2.4 million as an undrafted free agent. So enough, Right. Enough to do a little damage with, you know, DraftKings and things like that, but certainly not a situation where this guy was flush with cash and, you know, he wasn't looking for to supplement his income at any point in time. This was a floundering career in terms of basketball. My favorite point, if I want to throw a little sarcastic jab in here, is that somewhere in this statement, it talks about how part of the inside information was that he was offering people hints on when the Toronto Raptors were going to lose games. I don't think we needed help on that one this year, did we, Brandon? I think that was a pretty easy one to figure out, right?
Yeah.
You had an 80% chance you were going to get that one right this year.
Exactly. I needed more. I need spread information, Jonte. I don't need money line stuff. And that's where, you know, that's why I think his contract is an important one to discuss, because if people are looking at this, because this is what people tend to do with stories like this, especially as it coincides with the legalization of sports betting around the country in the great state of Florida that I live in. We're still only a couple of months into this. So all of the people that were anti-sports betting look at a story like this and go, see, this is the problem. $2.4 million is a lot of money for most people. But when you're looking at your career is probably going to end in a year and you don't have anything else, it's not as much. And you have to go through the taxes of Canada and paying an agent and all the things that you discuss where your money, you don't get the total amount. And you also don't know what's ahead. It doesn't excuse his decision-making. He's still an idiot for doing this. But you can understand where that could become a problem. My point is that this will never become a widespread issue for the people that you know about in the NBA. They simply make too much money.
Yep. And maybe even more to what you're saying, if you're the guy making $800,000 in a league where people are about to make $60 million a year, you're going to feel more pressure. You're going to feel more like, I don't belong here. I'm not the guy right now, right? You know what I mean? And you're going to be looking for more channels, more avenues to be competitive in and certainly to make a quick buck in it. And gambling's right there for you. So I completely understand the ruling here. I just want to say one thing, because I think you said it out loud once, and I do think it's going to start to make the rounds here. I'm reading the statement again. It does not say lifetime anywhere. It just says he's been banned. And it doesn't say forever. It doesn't say anything about a timeline. So I do want to leave that open-ended a little bit, that he has simply been banned for now. And I wonder if that has something to do with, we have to be very careful about how we treat each scenario individually. You know what I mean? If the first iteration is an immediate lifetime ban for a basically no-name player who made nothing with their league and made no impact on the league on the court, if they immediately go and do that, what happens if Luka Doncic gets popped next year for this? You know what I'm saying, Brandon? They have to be very...
You ban him. No, I look, and I am pro sports betting all the way, but...
I'm with you, but you know this different stuff.
There's
you
a
know
difference.
It, man.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but Calvin Ridley...
Yep.
Calvin Ridley was betting on games... Like, I think he was betting on college football within the locker room. He wasn't betting on Falcons games, right?
Never NFL games, but right, inside the facilities, okay. He was making his bets. Yep.
That you get, you can't do it. Okay. So slap on the wrist or whatever. It was beyond a slap on the wrist. The guy missed a year. Totally different.
Yep.
That even if you were betting on other teams within your league, that's another level. The second you start throwing basketball games and eliminating yourself from the game so that you can hit a prop, I don't care if it's LeBron. I don't care if it's LeBron James. Yeah, that should be no doubt you're done forever.
I believe that is exactly right. The fact that there were NBA games involved in his betting should immediately equal a lifetime ban. And they should say that. That should be part of the statement that his interaction with the NBA games, including his own involvement, right? Taking himself out. That was the weirdest part of this. Should equal that. But write the equation right now for the world. Write the formula that is going to be an immediate lifetime ban. So that when a Calvin Ridley situation happens in the NBA, you now have leeway to say, all right, we're going to treat this one a little bit differently because he's been betting on, you know, Cincinnati Reds games, right?
Right.
but I do think they have to start setting these precedences and writing the formulas. It's the one thing the NFL does kind of nicely is that there's a list on their website every year with, this is at least how we're going to try to handle our fines and our suspensions, right? This is how we're going to handle, hits from behind and low blocks and all this stuff. They at least try to put an equation out there for us. The NBA has been terrible at this. Terrible. To the point of where when John Morant is facing a suspension, it becomes like a week-long radio talk show to figure out how many games he's going to get, or Draymond Green. It becomes content to figure out what the NBA is actually going to do. That's not a great look. So especially with this, I want their language to be better because it's not good right now. It does not give us a timeline for how long Jontay Porter has been banned. And I'm with you. He's got NBA games included in this resume. He's got to be banned for life.
Yeah. And I just made the assumption, I guess, like, yeah, right. Banned. He's done forever, right? But very perceptive of you to pluck that out. Klay Thompson, 0 of 10 from the field in the Warriors' loss to Sacramento. He becomes an unrestricted free agent. This will be an interesting one to follow in the offseason. Steve Kerr said after the game that he wants to run it back. This guy cannot be serious. This is just not a good idea, right?
So I had myself an overreaction Wednesday for sure, right? To the point of where I started asking some people, why wouldn't Klay Thompson just retire? Why wouldn't he just walk away from this and save himself for what could become a disaster of 2024-25? It could be, right? I mean, he could go out there, and if this is really who he is, he's not 0 for 10, all right? He's not that bad of a player for sure. But I'm worried that he simply does not have, or mentally does not have the ability to ramp it up to the point of where he needs to be. And I just talked to Keith Smith this morning about it because I needed to calm down, right? I needed to get myself on the right level here because he's not retiring. He's 34 and he's been in a situation that has been protecting him for quite a while here. And Keith didn't even hesitate. All right. It wasn't even it could be this or it could be this. There were no bullet points. There were no and ifs. It was the Warriors are going to re-sign him. And it's going to be in the 2 for $40, 2 for $45 million range.
Oh, okay? God.
Yeah. So it's not even a question in Keith's mind. And Keith is as dialed in with this stuff as anybody in the world is. It's going to be more than we think it should be. It's going to be the Warriors. It's going to feel ceremonial. And that's exactly what they want to do. Because the alternative, and Keith didn't say this is me expanding on it. And you and I have talked about this. The alternative is, if we're going to do that, we should probably trade Seth Curry, because the right way to rip this thing off and save finances, et cetera, do all the right things is to trade that piece, not only for our own services, but so that Seth Curry has a chance over the next 3 seasons to go and win another title, which is something he deserves. So that's not going to be the case. That's why Steve Kerr was commissioned to say exactly what he said when he said it, Brandon. That was not an accident. That was not hyperbole. This is just what the Warriors are going to be for the next couple of years, as the Lakers were at the end of Kobe's career. This is just how we're going to operate. And if we end up stumbling into a title, amazing. When we don't, it's still worth our time because these guys put butts in seats, and that's all that matters to preserve their legacy and to keep us making a couple of bucks.
Man, nothing says we're good with the end of a dynasty like that decision. You're doing it for the fans. You're doing it for the fans and your own nostalgia. And if that's fine, they're not taking winning seriously with a decision like that.
It's fair. And by the way, one more thing Keith did mention is in order to bring Klay back, it likely means Chris Paul gets waived, which shouldn't come as a surprise, but that's the financial move that they would need to make to fit Klay back into the equation and become one of the top three tax teams in the NBA yet again. So it's silly. You're right. It's not about winning to say, can they get themselves back into the playoffs? I would think so. I would hope so, but who knows? This is, it seems to be the decision that they've already made internally. And I don't know. Do you wish it was different? Do you wish the Warriors were about to break things up right now, Brandon?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't impact me either way. Look, if they want to keep the core together, go for it. But if they called me for whatever reason and said, Brandon, we want your advice, I'd say it's over. It's over. And you've got to do something about it. Now you're in a tough situation financially. I get it. You are going to want to hang on to Steph. You can make the argument, maybe see what you can get for him. But Klay Thompson's got to go, and you've got to do whatever you can to try and trip into a player that is young and cheap and will change the direction of your franchise, much like Draymond Green did for you years ago in the second round, much like Nikola Jokic did for the Denver Nuggets. I don't think they have a first-round pick this year. They're going to have to trip into somebody And the only way to really allow that to happen is to open up cap space so that you can bring in different bodies. And Klay Thompson coming back is, like you said, it's ceremonial. If you want to have a ceremony, go for it. If you want to win games, you've got to move on.
They don't have a first that goes to Portland this year. It's currently projected to be the 14th pick in the league. So, yep, it's that's probably a factor in this, by the way, right? They don't have the ammo right now to make a gigantic change from a youth standpoint. So why not just bring back Klay?
Yeah. Let's finish with our quick hits. I'm going all NFL here. NFL draft a week from today. Excited about that. Will not fret over the fact that I have a Magic home game that night for game three, but
I'm running a soccer practice during the middle of it because that's good planning. Nicely done by me.
You planned that?
Yeah, that's I'm the coach. I'm an idiot. Yep.
I blame Adam Silver for mine, but that's on you. All right, let's start with Devontae Smith. 3 years, $75 million. How does this line up with other wide receivers in the league? Because he's a damn good one. And did he have to take a number two discount? Because he is technically the number two, I think, in this offense.
To some degree, it was certainly extremely important that this was a 3-for-75 reported contract, right? That 25 per year aligns him with AJ Brown. So it feels like now, at least from a report standpoint, that this is a true 1A, 1B in terms of wide receivers on this roster. Obviously, it's not that. This is a 5-year contract and the Eagles are going to do what they do, which is a signing bonus, 4 option bonuses, 4 void years, tons of dead cap on the back end of this thing already. He's getting minimum base salaries and huge option bonuses pretty much every year. So it's all there for him. You know, he can have, practically speaking, this is a 4-year, $69 million contract, which is pretty darn good for a 26-year-old that is essentially the second option on his team right now. It's just what Philadelphia does. Not many teams are going to do this. Not many teams are going to hold 2 wide receivers at $25 million a year. But getting it done early, immediately after year 3, the first time he's eligible, helps. Because A, they can spread it out like they've done. B, he's young, so there's less risk of this thing blowing up in their face. And by the way, I'm going to give him a little bit of credit. Denver tried to do this. Denver tried to do this with Cortland Sutton and with Jerry Jeudy, et cetera, before this all went to hell. So there are teams that do follow this moniker, and getting things done early can help. I would expect, to some degree, that Miami has to start going this route, right, in your neck of the woods, if they want to start keeping some of their players more long term. But it's the way to operate if you know that dead cap is always going to be down the road for you and you simply want to be in a contention where everybody comes in to win. Jalen Hurts has the same kind of contract structure. So does AJ Brown. So does the left tackle. So does the defensive end, right? It's just what they're doing. So it is simply not about the now with this cap stuff. His cap hits are 8, 7, 10, and 13 over the next 4 years. Okay. I mean, that's just what they do. And then they're going to take a $40 to $50 million dead cap hit, maybe even more if things get exercised when this all goes, you know, goes away in a couple of years. But yeah, he's on par with the upper echelon, maybe the lower second tier of wide receiver pay, at least for now. That's going to change over the course of the summer. But it aligns with AJ Brown. It makes everybody in the locker room happy, and it certainly syncs with the rest of the structure of the Eagles contracts.
Well, I'm glad he's happy. I have him in a keeper league, so we need to keep Devontae Smith happy.
He's underrated, Brandon. You don't think about him much, you know? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I think AJ Brown keeps him flying under the radar, right? But you can make the argument at this point, not 2 years ago, I think he's better than AJ Brown now. And you know, that's why I'm glad to see that he's paid on par, because I think he deserves it. Cortland Sutton, you mentioned him. He's skipping Broncos workouts in hopes for a new deal. Is he going to get it?
No. I don't know why Denver would do anything like that right now. They are in complete reset mode. You know, maybe they get the quarterback that they want. They get excited about it, and then they realize they should probably lock in at least one of their weapons for the long term to align with this quarterback situation. But they've got offensive line issues to figure out. They've got defensive line issues to figure out. Certainly they have a nice secondary in place. So there's some pieces there, but Cortland Sutton has 2 years and like $27 million left in this contract. And there's 12 draftable wide receivers in the top 100. And there's Brandon Ayuk trade rumors. And there's all sorts of ways to get a wide receiver right now. So I don't know why A, Cortland Sutton in Denver, or B, Darius Slayton with the Giants, which is an even worse example of what we're talking about here, think that they should be holding out right now, outside of the fact that the agent's saying, let's give this a shot. And I'm never going to tell a guy not to do that, right? If you're looking for your own, try to go get it. But I'm just not sure those two teams respectively are going to be pushing back by any means.
So DeForest Buckner signed an extension with Indianapolis, lowering his cap hit from $22 million down to $8 million. I was reading through some folks that cover the Colts. Apparently, this is pretty unique for Indianapolis. You would know as well as anybody. Is this a unique sort of restructure for DeForest Buckner?
It is, right? They gave up quite a lot to get him. It feels like forever ago now. That was almost five years ago now. He's just turned 30. All of those signs go against what Indy has generally done in the past. They are a revolving door type franchise, and they generally don't restructure out of the final years of contracts for cap purposes. But this is a straight $2 for $46 million extension, and much of that is fully guaranteed. There's 1 year of fluff here when he's 32 years old. That's probably well structured by them if you think about it. There's a guy still doing it. What I think has happened here, if you want some quick opinion analysis, I think Indy really likes what's going on right now. I think they're looking around their first week of workouts saying, man, we got something here. As long as that QB1 can stay healthy and this coaching staff can kind of figure out what's going on over the next couple of months. So I read this as a good win for Buckner, a good structure for the Colts, and probably a warning call to the rest of this division that, yeah, you guys are all being super aggressive, and we were mildly aggressive this offseason, especially with retaining our own. But we may be the best of the bunch when this thing's all said and done.
I was dead wrong on the Anthony Richardson. He didn't even play a full season, and I think we already saw it.
Yeah.
Any sort of doubter out there, that guy can play at an NFL level. And yeah, if he takes another step and stays healthy, they're going to be dangerous. Check me out on Twitter at Brandon Kravitz. And if you want to market your business, we can create content together. AuthenticAudioPro.com for more details on that. Hit subscribe and rate and review this podcast. Certainly helps SpotTrack zoom to the top of the sports rankings on all podcast platforms, and SpotTrack.com, your go-to for all of the latest in the sports contractual world. Mike Jannetty out there putting out more fires on social media after everything he created. Always a pleasure, Mike. We'll do it again next week.
Enjoy the basketball, man. Thanks.